780 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbite. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips to the BC. It is Sunday, the 13th of January, Anno Domini 2007. Eight. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton. Where did he come from?
Magically
appeared. Probably his mother.
At 7 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. So give us a call. When you do, speak slowly and softly, because Rob has had a rough weekend. A rough weekend.
You should clarify. I don't want people thinking I'm an alcoholic.
I didn't say that. I said you had a rough weekend. Yeah.
But that is the obvious assumption. With the exception of the occasional shot of whiskey to help dry up my cold. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he's not a well woman, and so he's
a well woman?
It's an old...
It's
an old, not Flanders and Swan. Moore, Cook and Moore.
I have no idea who
Dudley
that is.
Peter Cook, Dudley Moore.
Oh, Dudley Moore.
Yeah, they had a comedy duo in the 70s and 80s in England, and one of their things was about the Frog and Peach.
I wasn't alive in the 70s.
It was a restaurant, and the only thing they served was frog a la pêche. It's a frog boiled with a peach stuffed in its mouth. And pêche à la frog, which is a boiled peach, and when you cut it open, it's full of tadpoles. And I couldn't figure out why they didn't have any clients. And they talked about his wife, and I said, I hear your wife is not feeling well. She says, no, she's not a well woman. She's not a well woman? No, she's not a well woman. We have to lower her kicking and screaming into the well every day to feed the frog. She's not a well woman. And that's just come to us as a thing we do over and over and over over the years. So... anyway, give us a call. Save us from ourselves.
They could have gotten Python's Crunchy Frog Surprise.
It's basically the same idea.
But I was going to say, that felt like the bit I keep pulling on my wife. I keep saying, I got a week back. Good. When did you do that? Oh, about a week back.
Boom, boom.
I'll be here all week trying to deal.
Yeah. Try the ham, because we got plenty of that.
Ooh,
the United States Computer Emergency Response Team, U.S. CERT, has issued a warning that a fraudulent iPhone upgrade is making its way around the Internet and users should not be fooled into installing it. A package called iPhone Firmware 1.1.3 Prep, which described itself as an important system update, install this before updating to the new 1.1.3 firmware,
is floating around on the Internet. The fact is it does not come from Apple. That's clue number one that something is wrong. This Trojan claims to be a tool used to prepare the device for an upgrade to firmware version 1.1.3, the U.S. CERT advisory said. When a user installs the Trojan, other application components are altered. If the Trojan is uninstalled, the affected applications may also be removed. The iPhone is expected to receive a firmware upgrade to version 1.1.3, probably to coincide with the Macworld Expo this coming week. There's no official word from Apple on any upgrade, but the company is known for keeping its cards close to the vest. Symantec security team has also examined the virus and written its own alert. It said that while the bogus prep utility doesn't do much damage, it does overwrite some of the phone's utilities. This is technically the first Trojan horse seen for the iPhone. However, it does appear to be more of a prank than an actual threat. Nevertheless, iPhone users should exercise caution regarding the packages they choose to install on their phones. And the first rule of caution with the iPhone is if a piece of software doesn't come from Apple, be sure it's from a trusted source. There have been numerous attempts at cracking the iPhone protections to install software not approved for use by Apple or AT&T. So be very careful.
I guess you know you make the big time when the virus and malware writers target you.
That's it. Put a good spin on it.
Yeah.
I've said this a million times. It's time for the Apple people to wake up and smell the viruses. The reality is that they are going to find
they're coming.
More and more people are going to be writing stuff against them. And all those smug Apple people whose machines suddenly stop working because they don't have to protect them, they're Apples, are going to be in some trouble. So it's important to be more and more careful as you go along, more and more careful.
Well, it's like in today's paper in the business section there, they're talking about how the cell phones and putting advertising on it. So if you're in a particular location because of the GPS tracking, say you're in front of a Starbucks, but all of a sudden your cell phone will ring and they'll send you a Starbucks ad with a certificate to get a discount.
Yep.
And it's like, No.
Yeah, location-based marketing. It's been big for a while now, but they're finally getting it out into the public.
I read about some cell phone conferences. This has been available for a long time, but the companies are scared to use it because of the privacy issues.
Yeah. And,
now, if I'm walking down the street and where's a good pizza joint and ask my phone that and it tells me, great. But if I'm walking down the street and it prompts me, that's annoying.
Well, like they said, though, you know, the thing that is I could be standing in a restaurant and all of a sudden I get an ad for that particular restaurant. Well, you might be porked off a little more if I just came out of that restaurant from eating.
Right.
And now get the discount offered to me.
Or you walk into the food court at a mall and your phone rings 84 times.
Yeah. Just because.
I don't think so. Thank you.
A lot of them are saying that they're going to be very leery because try to gain that little bit of money that they might get out of it versus having the clients get so ticked off because their names are being now sold for this advertising that they're going to go to another company.
Right.
They're trying to, you know, get customer loyalty.
There are already a lot of places that advertise on television that I won't patronize because I find it annoying on television.
Yes.
Let alone the cell phone.
Well, the worst thing, and this, I realize nobody has control over this, but you're watching a drama and it gets really intense and really, you know, babies dying, people getting their limbs cut off, and then it cuts to a commercial and there's this little gecko dancing around and being happy. It's like, excuse me, I'm sorry. You've broken the mood now, and I will never buy your product.
One of the original Howling movies where the newscaster gets bitten, and she's on screen, a live news show, turns into the werewolf, and then her boyfriend shoots her with the silver dart. They cut to commercial, cuts commercial. A big heaping plate of dog food.
Yeah, yeah.
And his little kids, mommy, mommy, the news lady's turning into a werewolf.
Yeah. All right, our first caller is Bob from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
Recently, I upgraded to Microsoft Office Small Business. My kids are having some issues with compatibility with what we're using at home versus what was in school. And I encourage them to save their work frequently, but both of my daughters have run into an issue where suddenly their Word document turns into a read-only document. And I haven't been able to find anything to indicate why that might be happening.
Is it read-only on the small business edition, or is it read-only when they take it somewhere else?
No, it's read-only while they're working on it. They suddenly do a save, and then that particular save doesn't let them save it because it suddenly says it's a read-only document. They haven't reopened it. You know, they've been working on it, and you know, after X number of saves, but I don't think it's a particular number, the document suddenly is read-only, and they can't save it again without renaming it.
Well, I know that's true if you open them in Internet Explorer, which you can do.
And you can make them read only on purpose.
Interesting.
Yeah, neither of those is what's happening, which is why I've been scratching my head.
What folder are they saving the documents into?
I believe folders within their personal My Documents settings. I mean, we have, you know, separate user accounts on the computer, but they're working within their own.
Does this happen when they print?
No. While they're working on the document, I try to tell them to save, like, after every paragraph or whatever in case something happens so they don't lose their work. And it's while they're working on it, suddenly they go to save it, and it says it's read-only, and they can't save it. You guys are as stumped as I am, obviously.
Well, you can mark it unread-only in the properties. You can uncheck the read-only flag, but why it's setting it to read-only is the trick.
Have they cleaned up the temp files?
Probably not.
They're saying here that you might want to clean out your temp files because that can choke things up.
One of the ways that programs will save a document is that they will save your current document as a new temporary name, delete the old document, and then rename the temporary document to your current name. Sometimes we've seen if the hard drive is full, it has trouble doing that. So you might want to make sure you have enough disk space free.
Could also be a permissions problem in the storage location, but then it would come up right away, not
while it's being worked on.
And I've been trying, when I sit at the computer, and I've been trying to create documents to make it happen under my settings so I can try to figure out what's going on. I can't get it to do it. It's happening to both my daughters in their individual workspaces.
Here's a recommendation I found to go into the security options, security tools options, security tabs, and there's a read-only box in there where you can make a document read-only.
Yeah, but how do you make it not read-only?
Yeah, uncheck the read-only box. Why it's doing it for you is the annoyance.
And I was trying to figure out if there was because they like to use shortcuts a lot, if there was a shortcut that triggered read-only that maybe they were accidentally doing, but I couldn't find one that even, you know, a shortcut that set it to read-only.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't at the moment have any idea. We will, I promise you, look into this, but I just... Well,
I found his same question being asked by someone in 2004, where you're working in Word and it turns itself into read-only. And the answer was to check the security options inside of Word.
Yeah, I think I saw that same post.
We will look into this, I promise you.
Okay.
Don't have an instant answer for you, but we will look into this. I'm sorry.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. I don't know what would cause
that. Yeah, something that would sit there and cause it. And you've already scanned it for any Trojans or spyware.
Yes. I've got computer associate stuff on the computer, and nothing has shown up.
I tell you what. Also, download and try, do a search for the super anti-spyware.
Super anti-spyware.
Yeah. That one seems to be finding a lot more than some of these other brands.
Okay.
Try running that, because there might be something else in there. It's got to be triggering the read-only. I mean, because otherwise in Word, the default is not to make it read-only. I mean, I can see it read-only if I'm copying it from a DVD that had been burned and saved to a DVD, because they...
Yeah, when it's on a read-only drive, it becomes a read-only file.
Yeah, and so when you're moving it from a DVD or a CD back onto a hard drive, it still has that attribute. But since you're not doing that, something else has got to be in there and triggering it. Right offhand, we just don't have an instant answer. We're going to have to look into that.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, I'm finding a lot of references where you can go into the options and make things read-only. So you go in there and unmake it read-only.
Right. I don't know. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton. Almost missed it. Nick Francesco and all of you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Before we go back to the phone calls, we are in the show. A day after Microsoft Corporation accidentally sent a patch to some users running the Windows Vista operating system, the company updated the preview release of Vista Service Pack 1, SP1, to a small group of testers. Microsoft has released the latest pre-release build of SP1, Windows Vista SP1 RC Refresh. That's what they're calling it. Windows Vista SP1 RC Refresh. To approximately 1,500 beta testers. This group includes corporate customers, consumer enthusiasts, software and hardware vendors, and others. The code is not available for public download. 4 weeks ago, Microsoft made Vista SP1 release candidate available to the general public for the first time. The 1,500 beta testers, however, had earlier beta versions to work with, as well as this most recent update. The company has slated Vista SP1 for final delivery this quarter, and on Thursday it said it remained on track. We are still on schedule to deliver SP1 RTM in Q1, BFD, said the spokeswoman. In a separate issue, though, the company Wednesday admitted a snafu in the Windows Vista update it issued Tuesday to prep PCs for the latest release of SP1. The update was one of three prerequisites for Service Pack 1 unveiled on Tuesday and was supposed to end up only on Vista Enterprise and Vista Ultimate machines, since it targeted BitLocker, the full drive encryption technology bundled with those premium versions of the operating system. Instead, the update was also offered to PCs running Vista Home Basic and Home Premium. We had a small number of early customer reports that in some cases, there are only a small number of people running Vista, that in some cases this update was being offered for installation on all Windows Vista editions versus just Ultimate and Enterprise, said a poster in the Microsoft company blog. For systems set to download and install updates automatically, the update will not install even if it is already downloaded, so most people will not be affected by this. They do the download, but they don't do the install. So if you're running on a fairly slow connection, that's just deadly. But it was just a small problem. It didn't really cause a problem for anybody, because if you're not running Ultimate or Premium, not Premium, Enterprise or Ultimate, then you don't have BitLocker anyway, and the update would not install. BitLocker is pretty neat. It actually lets you lock your entire hard drive. So for those of you who are indeed using Vista and actually have programs that run under it, I have it on a laptop, by which I mean you bought it, the biggest, fastest, almost unbelievable laptop you want, and it still runs like it was 1980.
Yeah.
You can encrypt the entire hard drive, so if you lose it or it's stolen, the data are still secure, which is actually a pretty nice thing.
Except one of the problems with encrypting the data on the hard drive is that if any sector fails on the hard drive, you may lose all the data because the decryption may not work.
Right, 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 right.
So it makes sense to have good encrypted backups, too.
Always. Unencrypted backups if you keep them in the office, encrypted if you're moving around with them. All right, before we get back to the phones, let me point out one more time. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you can not only create a username and log into the Soundbites chat room, it also tells you where to download IRC clients. It also gives you the live audio stream link. It also gives you links to the cameras. And Chris is waving. You don't have to ask us. You don't have to continually ask in the forums. They're right on the homepage of Soundbites, right on the homepage. If you look just below the stuff in large bold, you'll see regular text with links to all of those things. Okay, now we're going back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question? Bob, did you just move in from Brighton? Because that's where you called from a minute ago.
No, that was somebody else.
Oh, it was a different Bob.
Sure?
Oh, there's more than one? Who knew?
Ooh.
What's your question, Bob?
Well, running Vista,
I hope
when I explain my problem, you'll say, well, it works in XP.
Yeah.
I go to my computer, I right-click on my C drive, I select properties, I select tools, I select defrag now.
You shouldn't be defragging or need to defrag with Vista.
Well,
I mean, that's stopped back with Windows XP.
Yeah, the NTFS file system and HFS Plus on the Mac try not to let files get fragmented in the first place. So running a defrag will, you know, almost wear your hard drive out faster.
Anyway, what seems to be the problem? Now that we've told you you shouldn't do it, what is the problem?
Well, I was gonna set a schedule, 15th of every month. Right? So I do that. I noticed that the word apply doesn't get highlighted, but I click OK, and it shows the schedule, okay, to 15th of every month, 5 in the morning. Then I go to my external hard drive that's connected to USB port, and that's drive F, and I right-click on that and select properties and go to tools and set up a schedule for the defrag on the external. When I do that, and like say if I make that for a Wednesday, and I click OK because some reason apply does not come highlighted, then I go back and I look at the schedule on my C drive, and it then got changed to what I changed to F. So I can't set two separate defrag schedules for two separate drives.
Yeah, that is one of the many things that does not work well under Vista.
Does it work in XP?
Yeah. Better. Yes, it does. But you need to understand what we just said earlier. You really don't need to defrag often, if at all.
Once a year, that would probably be a lot.
The big thing about defragging was back in the old days
when you had a 20
the RTL
meg hard
drives and they were 20 meg and they worked on an entirely different principle than they do now. You really did have to do that because things got very slow and very out of order and it was terrible. But nowadays with multi-head platters and the way that things are put out on the hard drive to begin with.
Well, it's also a function of DOS, the way we're dealing with NTFS.
Right, and
now
we don't use DOS anymore. We use NTFS and with the multi-head platters and everything else. If you defrag once a year, would be a lot.
And when you say that you're referring to the C drive, what about an external hard drive?
Same thing.
Yeah,
nobody uses DOS.
NTFS.
Yeah. If it's NTFS, if it's still a fat drive, then you do indeed need to defrag it regularly.
No, it's NTFS.
But that would be once every 6 months, not once. You know, people used to get nuts. They would defrag them every Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
really, a few times a year, max. Depending, that would be somebody doing an unbelievable amount of work.
The only time you may need to defrag is if you're doing high-end video. and you need to have hundreds of gigabytes of contiguous disk space to record your three-hour Hollywood
or massive
movie.
Databases.
Right.
And again, you need hundreds of gigabytes of contiguous disk space.
So basically, the bottom line is don't bother set up a schedule to defrag any drive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you find yourself sitting at home on a cold January afternoon and you got cabin fever, knock yourself out. But beyond that, you don't need it.
It's the leftover troubleshooting tips from ages ago in earlier OSs. Mm-hmm. And my computer's running slow. Try a defrag. Nowadays, the hard drives are so fast, you don't notice when they are fragmented, and the OS doesn't let them get fragmented in the first place.
Right. Because it's more efficient in the way that it saves programs and everything else, not these little bits and taking up so much wasted space. Because back in the old DOS days, if I had, say, 3 8-bits, and it was doing 16-bit clusters, it would waste an extra cluster, and that's how you got a fragmented drive. Well, NTFS takes it in the allocations that it needs. If it's a 23K file, that's what it takes, 23K bits of information on that hard drive in order.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation.
Sure.
It's just a far more efficient way of doing business.
I love telling people that the solution to your problem is you don't have a problem.
Yeah. And you don't have to do that, saving you thus time.
Right, exactly.
Just as you don't have to rebuild carburetors anymore.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much. But
in fact,
there's
you probably
a skill.
Can't rebuild a modern carburetor.
Yeah, you really can't. And there's a skill that's kind of lost to us forever, isn't it? All right, our next caller is Jeff from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I want to really thank you for everything you do because you've helped me before. And
our pleasure.
It's a great program you actually have.
Thank you.
It isn't really a problem, but right now it's looking into the future, sort of. Actually, I have a wireless system in a home, but I also have, I'm looking at maybe, instead of necessarily pulling another line to another building on the same property, I wondered if there's a way, and I want your recommendation because I've gotten a million, you know, everybody has advice on everything, and now I'm confused. So,
yeah.
Opinions are like noses. Everybody has one.
Exactly. What it actually is I'm running an old G system that actually broadcasts to everything within the house, okay? Now I'm thinking of, instead of pulling another line in, you know, for a business and to try and broadcast to an outbuilding that is probably maybe 100 feet away. And people are telling me to take my router, upgrade it to an N. And then some people say the N will work with a G. And then I heard other people say upgrade to a D, and a D will work with a G. And
why not just
heard,
boost the signal on the G?
Yeah, probably the simplest and easiest thing would be to get a directional antenna on your G, and either a directional antenna pointing at another antenna in the other building, or a bigger antenna on your G that will push the signal farther. One of the advantages of N is it uses multiple antenna so that it can pick up fainter signals, so it gives you a longer range. So that's why people are telling you to upgrade to N, because it has a longer range and you might be able to get in the other building.
But if you didn't, now you've still got to boost the signal on the N.
Right. There's some interesting case studies, I guess. Practical experiments on the net. People that are using even wireless B and G. And the last record I had read about was 112 miles.
Was that the one with the Pringles can?
Oh, my God.
Well, no, that was on really high-quality antenna sitting on two mountaintops. Now, the Pringles can, the joke is that because of the aluminum interior of a Pringles can, it happens to be the right size for the wavelength of the radio transmission, that you can make a really cheap antenna out of that. And one of the earlier stories was a lighthouse in California that was able to get 10 miles off the coast.
What you really need is to just boost your signal, and there are a dozen products that will do that,
and a lot of
who
times,
makes your G router.
Yeah, the company that makes your router will often have an antenna booster for that router, or you can get some generic antenna boosters.
Right.
And there's two types of antenna boosters. There's omnidirectional that broadcasts in every direction, and then unidirectional that just points in a single direction.
That's the one
you want.
Right, yeah. So if you boost your antenna in your house, the neighbors on the other side are going to get it too, not just the one building you want to get it to.
Also check the manual for your router.
Okay.
Some of them only broadcast at, say, 70% power.
Right.
So you can go in and set a parameter that boosts the broadcast signal right in the thing without even adding a booster.
Okay. Because a lot of people were, and that was.
Well, it depends on which one you have, and now you're going to have to actually read the manual. But the other thing to be sure of is when you boost that signal, in fact, don't even wait for this, make sure that the whole thing is protected.
Right.
Don't run an open wireless access point. Make sure it's protected. At the very least, you should use WEP. WPA would be better.
Okay.
You can break WEP with a wristwatch, but WPA is pretty robust.
Okay. Well, thank you. That seems to be the best because I guess everybody, especially in the big box stores, wanted to sell me something brand new.
Of course. Yeah.
And the newer routers do have longer range and faster speeds. That's the big advantage of the N standard is it's, twice the range and five times faster than G.
Right.
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
Yeah.
And that's nice. If you can afford it, go for it. You're probably still going to need a booster.
Right.
And make sure you definitely have it set with some form of encryption.
Right. Yeah, if you Google Cantenna,
yeah,
you'll find a lot of people who have made Pringles Can antennas or Reynolds Wrap antennas.
Okay. That's what I'll do. And I, like I said, thank you so much for somebody with a little knowledge, but not a lot. I always like to look to the gurus to actually give the true advice. And everything you've ever answered for me has worked spot on, and I really appreciate it.
Well, it's absolutely our pleasure. Thank you very much for listening. Keep listening. Thanks. Don't forget to go to the Soundbite store and buy something. Oh, sorry.
Boy, we've been fooling him for quite a while.
Some people just
know what the heck we're talking about. And this has been going on for how many years?
I know, 18 years and some odd months. We're in 18 years, 4 months, and 10 days we've been on the air. 18 years. It feels like 30. I mean, three.
Wait a minute, Rob wasn't even born then.
Exactly right. I don't know that Rob was born 18 years ago.
Maybe.
I wish. Thank you. Buy you anything you want.
Oh, okay.
Remember the Jay Silverheels interview on Johnny Carson, where he's doing a job interview? What was your previous job? Me worked 30 years for Kemosabe, hunt, fish, cook, clean clothes. 30 lousy years. Why did you leave?
Right,
him find out what Kemosabe meant.
Yeah, right. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. The United States Computer Emergency Readiness Team, which we already know is pronounced U.S. CERT, has discovered a new buffer overflow vulnerability with Apple's QuickTime Media software. The vulnerability affects both Mac and Windows operating systems. Because QuickTime is part of Apple's popular iTunes jukebox software, that application is also affected, researchers said. The vulnerability is found in the way QuickTime handles RTSP response messages. When attempting to display a specially crafted reason phrase, QuickTime Player crashes at a memory location that can be controlled by the attacker. That is very, very bad, according to U.S. CERT. The organization also said they are aware of publicly available proof-of-concept code for this vulnerability. U.S. CERT offers several solutions to the problem, including uninstalling QuickTime or disabling the QuickTime plugins in your web browser. Attackers targeted QuickTime in December with a separate RTSP vulnerability that Apple later fixed with a software update. So my suggestion, until this fixed is changed, you disable QuickTime in your system. I realize for Apple people, that's pretty much impossible. But you Windows folks really ought to be disabling QuickTime as much as possible.
Now, Nick, until this is fixed. I'm sorry. By that, you mean disable it in the web browser?
In Windows, that's all you have to do. On the Mac, of course, it's part of the base operating system. It's kind of woven into everything. You can't run iTunes without it. You can't run a bunch of stuff without it.
Well, where I'm going with this is, what if I'm not on the internet? What if my browsers are closed? Can I still use QuickTime to play the files on my computer safely?
Assuming you didn't download those files from the internet, sure.
I have downloaded many of them, created many of them, but I've scanned all of them.
I don't know that there's a scan for this yet.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You know, most Mac people couldn't care less about scanning because they're invulnerable.
I'm not among them.
I know you're not, and you're a wise man.
Thank you.
But that I don't know that there's any scan for this yet either. I mean, I would be very careful of anything I downloaded in the last, say, 3 to 4 weeks.
So we could play it maybe in VLC, though?
Yeah, I suspect that would be fine. VLC. Well, I don't know that VLC doesn't use the QuickTime libraries on the Mac. I'd have to really look into that. I don't know that.
All right.
Careful.
When did this vulnerability get announced?
Wednesday, Thursday?
This week, yeah. The last QuickTime security update was December 13th.
Right, that was for the last one that happened. Yeah. Right.
So there'll be another one coming soon.
Right, the last
be very careful.
Right, that was when it was fixed. It was announced like back in November or whatever, and they fixed it in December. So I don't know when we'll see the fix for this one, but I'd be very careful for a while. I know Mac people are smug and complacent, and they don't bother to care. And I know you're not. They don't really care. They assume they're invulnerable. They are, at this moment at least, completely wrong. All right, our next caller is, how do you pronounce your first name? Yvonne? Hello?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. How are you? How do you pronounce your first name?
Yvonne.
Yvonne?
Yeah.
Oh, Yvonne.
Just like
Well, I have no idea what got printed on the thing there. I get it. Welcome, Yvonne. What's your question?
Thank you. My question is, in the next week, I'm going to have a Time Warner connection, the internet and telephone.
Oh, very nice.
And Mike, I'm ignorant when it comes to computer, but I'm trying to learn. Next week when they come, I was wondering if it's possible. I do have a generator that most of my things are connected to the generator in case of electricity goes out.
Sure.
Is there possible that they can connect the computer and the telephone to that?
If it's got enough wattage on that generator, absolutely.
But be honest with you, I wouldn't.
Why?
Well, only because generators, if they're... Say, depending on what type of generator it is. If it's one of these gas ones.
No, it's outside. It's a big one.
Oh, okay. So this is going to be running, off of natural gas?
By the end of the system, it's sold it.
Okay, right. yes, I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
As you can plug anything into it, you can plug the power cord for your cable modem. You can plug your computer cord, and you can plug your monitor cord into it. Not a problem.
I was mainly concerned with a telephone because if you have no electricity, you have no telephone.
The cable router that you get will have a telephone jack on it where you plug your standard telephone into. So you want to have that cable router connected to the generator so it keeps working.
Okay. Yeah, and I would put this all on a UPS.
Uninterruptible power supply. But that's something.
Throwing
UPS to send it to us because we could use that.
Right. See, it depends on how fast the generator can kick on, too. If it takes 30 seconds or a minute for the generator to kick on, then.
Yeah.
Well, she's not worried about internet connection, and she doesn't seem to be worried about her computer.
Telephone,
she's more worried about the phone.
Because I don't have cell phones. So in case of an emergency.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best thing you can do is to hook it up to that generator. If you wanted to put a little uninterruptible power supply in between so that for the time the generator is kicking on, the phone will still work through that battery, that would be fine, too.
Okay.
But either one would be fine. Both would be even better.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for all the information that you provide for all of us.
It's our pleasure, Yvonne. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to talking to the gentleman after you, the maintenance people.
Oh, yeah?
From Sophia.
Oh, there you go. They're coming on. They'll be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I bet all the home generator and home power companies are going to have a lot of work this week.
Yes, I bet they are.
After everyone that was out of power.
Well, my daughter's been working. I've had my grandson. I've had my grandson all week because she's been busy. She works for RG&E and putting up the poles. You know, we're getting the crews out there and just been working crazy hours getting them back up because it was taking them so long just to clean up the debris before they could even get in there and do the pole. So it was like unbelievable. Long.
Well, yeah, I had a friend who didn't have power as of Friday, but I assume she's got power now. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Reich, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. 50 minutes after the hour, sound bites on 1180 WHAL. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, kiddies. It's that time once again.
Oh.
Go put... Dave wakes up.
Got him excited now.
Is it 5 to 12 already? get your footy jammies on. Gather around. You know the story. It's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave.
No problem.
Yeah.
I almost forgot about it. Well, we were talking about this before.
Yeah, we haven't done this so often, so I can see where you wouldn't remember.
Yeah. But anyways.
Now. No, you're getting old.
Thank you. I resemble that problem. But anyways, we were talking about this before, and, you know, we've been seeing it a lot lately, at least in our shop, and I'm sure Steve's been seeing it in his. But these lizard lips that keep coming in with their problems here, and that, well, you know, I got this part, and you installed it for me, so you must have put it in wrong, and it's defective. So you're going to cover the warranty, right? Wrong. Wrong, Hazel.
We did put it in right. It's not defective. Yeah. What did you do to the computer?
Exactly. You've been using it, and they come right up and say that they've been using it for the past few weeks, and it's been working fine, and all of a sudden it died. But you didn't buy the part from me, so there is no warranty with me, because you wanted to save the few bucks and go get the part somewhere else, and then you couldn't figure it out how to install it, so you bring it to us and do it. We did it. It worked. It worked fine. It just didn't last long because, oh, you bought some cheap piece of crud. You get what you pay for, folks.
And you pay for what you get.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I get folks all the time keep saying, well, you know, I can go get this machine for $400. Go ahead. I'll only service it later and make the money there because you're buying junk. Or if it doesn't work right, don't shoot the messenger when I come in and tell you your Windows 98 machine that's only got, 128 mega memory would run a lot better if it was up to 512, and you get all ticked off because I want to sell you some memory so it'll work better. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm only here to repair it and get you back up and working the best I can. So, you know, if you buy something cheaper elsewhere and it dies, again, don't come complaining to me.
There's usually a reason why it's cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, discontinued models, too. I love that. They'll go on eBay.
Yeah.
You know, and get these ones that, or they've been refurbished and that type of stuff. And then they bring it over, we install it for them, and then it breaks right away.
I had somebody ask me, they bought one of those $200 computers from Walmart and it broke. What do they do? Where do they take it? I said, that big green thing out in your front yard. That's the only place. Well, all right.
Actually, no, you can't. They're hazardous waste. You got to take
them. That's right. That's actually true. We're done with another story hour or not. They keep slopping over into other segments. We're putting Uncle Dave back on the shelf for another week. There he goes. Bye-bye, Uncle Dave. Nice talking to you. Holy cow. All righty then. Have we got time for one more call? No, no time for calls. We had story hour.
You mean I could have kept going?
No, you could not. No. What? No. We had enough of Uncle Dave. Good old Uncle Dave. We love you, though, Uncle Dave.
It was calm.
What? You were. You were. For you, you were astonishingly calm. You actually were. All right, we are going to take a break while we pour cold water over Dave. We're not sure if that'll calm him down or turn him into Splash Dance, but we're going to do it anyway. We'll be back on the other side. Woo! We're going to take a break now. We're going to get some oxygen to Chris. You're going to take a break so you can get all the news and weather and sports and all the stuff you really listen to Wham for. We'll be back on the other side with a whole lot more of your calls, with the poll, with all the other stuff that we do here on Soundbites. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, your calls and all of that other stuff. We are, of course, the greatest computer show in the known universe, also the longest running at over 18 years. You're part of a trend that's longer than your memory. We're Soundbites, and we are back in just a couple of minutes on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, as you know, every week we have all kinds of interesting things that go on at our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, for example, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about where you buy your music online. 293 of you voted, tying for number 185. And the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. 61% of you voted nowhere, followed by only 23% who said iTunes, 6% said other, 6% said Amazon, 2% said Rhapsody, 1% said Napster, 1% said Magnatunes, and nobody buys from Amie Street or Amy Street or Amie Street, or I don't really care how you pronounce it, just so you know. This week's poll is about an interesting thing that that we read in the news this week. In the last 2 weeks, hackers exploited an 18-month-old vulnerability in Microsoft Windows in three high-profile attack campaigns to infect PCs with advanced rootkits and launch infections from thousands of compromised websites. Since December 28th, the same exploit has been used by attackers who jumped on the news of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto's assassination, by attackers who earlier had hacked thousands of sites using a robotic SQL injection attack, and by the creators of a sophisticated master boot record rootkit invisible to Windows. The exploit is for a bug within an MDAC, a Microsoft Data Access component. It's a bug that was patched in April of 2006 by Microsoft's MS-06-014 security update. When Microsoft fixed the flaw, it issued updates for every version of Windows then supported, from 2000 through XP and Windows Server 2003. Within days of the April 2006 release of a fix, hackers had come up with a working exploit to hit everybody who hadn't been fixed. It doesn't require a special version of Windows. This is why people love this hack, because it really works. It doesn't require a special version of Windows. It works with all of them except Vista. It doesn't require anything else like specific versions of Internet Explorer. And it's really, really easy to tweak. This combination has proved irresistible. It's a good exploit in the sense of bad for us. It's in all the exploit packages, so there's a bunch of attacks that do it. And this upgrade that's from April of 2006 is as common as can be. You just need to make sure you do the update. The thing is, so many people haven't been updating. This thing has hit millions of computers because people have not done the update. So the question is your main Windows system fully patched? The choices are absolutely. Nope. I have no idea. Mac people chuckle smugly, and Linux people chuckle avuncularly. And so far, you don't know what avuncular means. Look it up. That's why God made dictionaries. So far, we've had 82 votes. 56% of you said absolutely, followed by 18% who said Linux people chuckle avuncularly. 12% have no idea, the only honest people on the Windows side of the poll. 9% said nope. Oh, they're honest as well. And Mac people chuckle smugly. That's just four of you. When you're done voting, please feel free to check that little yellow box out underneath it. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. It's an 11 shooter. It goes to 11.
Oh, no.
Where you can enter an opinion, because I know you people, and just clicking a box is not enough to vent your spleen. So go there and do that. Check out my website while you're there. I do a newsletter. You can search the old newsletters. I do tips and tricks, Q&A. Questions, the questions and answers. I do rants and raves. I do all kinds of stuff, and you can search and all of that. You can get into the forums where we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. Iron Wire and I are trying to figure out what we're going to do for the 20th anniversary of Soundbites. We'll figure out something. That's over a year away, so we've got time to think. And it's only $15 a year, so I can't imagine why you wouldn't be a member. It's just silly not to be, don't you think? And then join us back on the Soundbites website where all the forums and stuff are, and it's lots of fun there, too. In the meantime, we will now go back to the phones, and our next caller is Andrew, all the way from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Andrew. What's your question?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Actually, quick note, I am a Mac user, but I'm not a Mac snob. My nose is pointed straight ahead, not up.
Well done, Andrew. Well done.
My question actually is, problem with Windows. I recently reinstalled Windows XP on my girlfriend's computer.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the computer is dormant for more than, I'd say, half an hour or so. The entire taskbar from the start menu over to the clock would appear at the top of the monitor, and everything runs real glitchy. Like, I'd have to reboot because I can't access anything. And I can't for the life of me figure out anything. I've tried turning off my screensaver and then also selecting where monitor doesn't go to sleep and the hard disks don't go to sleep, but I just
okay.
Still
two
love it.
One thing, Andrew, is there are two places you can set where stuff goes to sleep.
Okay.
And A, they're mutually incompatible. And B, even if you only pick one, Windows XP often doesn't deal with it well. So what you want to do is go into your BIOS.
Okay.
And make sure that none of the settings that would turn things off are active in there.
Okay.
And then, again, make sure that they're all turned off in Windows. You don't really need things to go dormant as much as you need things to... maybe you can turn off your monitor, that sort of fare, but the rest of it doesn't really... The entire machine really draws about as much power as a 100-watt light bulb when it's just sitting there.
And it's very annoying to have to wait a minute for it to wake up.
Yeah. Yes, 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 it is. But I understand being green, but in this case, there's too much green. There's green in the BIOS, and there's green in Windows. Turn it off in the BIOS always and let Windows handle it.
Okay.
There's actually a new... because the ENERGY STAR certifications have basically worked, and we've gotten rid of all this, most of the CRTs, so we're using low-power LCDs. Now the next step is power supplies, and there's a new power supply thing coming out called 80+, which they're trying to get power supplies to be very efficient, at least 80% efficient. So now inside the computer, it's just using less power and generating less heat, which would always be good.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Yeah, wasting less power and generating
all right.
less heat.
Okay, actually, well, I've done all that, and it seemed to have done it, but the other day it did it once, and nothing was dormant. It just did it, like, I went to work, I came back around 5 o'clock, so it hadn't been used since about 8 o'clock in the morning, and it had done the same issue. After I had changed, I mean, I didn't go into the BIOS or anything, but the computer, there was no screen service, nothing.
Well, but you have to listen to what I'm saying. There are two places where things get shut down, and one is in the BIOS. You have to make sure those are off.
Okay.
Because Windows doesn't deal well with the stuff that can turn off in the BIOS.
Power management.
So you need to make sure that all power management is off in the BIOS.
Okay.
All right, do that and let us know.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Our next caller, Jim from Springwater, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hey, I'm thinking of setting up a wireless router system.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I look into it, the more I confuse myself.
Yeah. Welcome to the club.
When I look at the specs, it says that 99% of the routers that I'm looking at say they use 64 or 128-bit encryption.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, is that going to cause a problem? What about 256?
The more you have, the better off you are. So if you want that, pay for a more expensive router that will give you a higher grade of encryption.
But on the other side of that, the card that's in your computer has to support that same encryption level.
And right now, if you go like with the Linksys doing 128-bit encryption, unless you're storing super sensitive information that, you know, a lot of folks are going to want to hack into and everything else.
And what we mentioned earlier, too, don't look at WEP. You'll find cheap routers that only have WEP or WEP encryption. Right. Ignore those. Get a WPA. WEP can be broken, with a toothpick.
Yeah,
WPA is much more secure. You're going to pay a little more for a WPA router, but it's worth it.
And, like I say, the Linksys are easy to set up. You can set up the passwords. And the average person around here, like I say, unless you were working for the government or some national security system, they're not going to break into your house trying just to get your word processing information or your banking and all that. It's not too likely.
And make sure you definitely protect it. I was at a meeting the other day and opened up my laptop, and there were 9 separate networks, wireless networks available to me. The only one that was protected was the one I was on, the one I wanted to be on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So be very careful.
Okay. One other question. While I'm sitting here at my computer, I got a pop-up from SpyBot.
Yeah.
That says the category startup global entry value changed. Entry was ISUSPM startup, and the old data and new data, the only thing that changed was it changed the C drive from a capital C to a lowercase c. What's the
ISUFPM?
ISUSPM.
Oh, yes. There's that SUSP tells me it's a suspension thing. So there is definitely something in your BIOS that's trying to suspend the hard drive.
Oh, okay.
Shut that down.
That or in the power management.
Right, in the BIOS.
Yeah. or in Windows.
Or in Windows, right.
Yeah, in Windows under options, check your power options there and in the BIOS. Make sure everything says none.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
I should also mention there's a guy in the forums, Hargo, that is pleading with us not to tell people to password protect their routers because he relies on open wireless network when he's traveling.
Argo?
Good for him.
We have a friend. We should talk a little bit about this. We have an old friend from the forums who has become bohemian in some odd way. He's now wandering the universe in his van, just wandering around. And
yeah,
and you can follow his exploits at argyleinamerica.com. And yes, he's relying on other people's and the generosity of strangers to keep his wireless connection going. He's clearly he's not in the chat room today, so he must not be anywhere near somebody else's. Yeah, and there's not a lot of wireless at the Grand Canyon, actually. I've been there, and it's kind of a dry place for wireless.
But the signal should bounce around well. You should be able to get anything that's there, if anything.
Yeah, right. If somebody sets one up, you ought to be able to get it pretty much anywhere.
You know, a thought on the wireless stuff. If you don't, or I'm sorry, not the wireless, but the encryption. If you don't need to swipe an ID card to use your computer, you don't need 256 bits of encryption.
Yeah.
But you do need encryption, whoever you are.
Right. Right.
40 bits or 128, fine.
Right. And 128, right. Should at least something should be, there should be something there. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. Everybody,
exciting and new.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Captain Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, Julie would tell you it's soundbites.
You guys sit there and criticize me about Dave.
See, if you're Captain Stubing,
if folks could only see you guys,
Gopher and Doc and everybody.
Captain Stubing.
By much. Do you know, I never actually watched that once or twice, you know, when Charo was on. That was it. All right.
Gucci.
We're back. According to security vendor McAfee, one of the profiles on MySpace currently serves up a fraudulent Microsoft security update that, if clicked, attempts to load malicious software. The profile of a 42-year-old woman from Arkansas appears to exist solely for the purpose of infecting visitors. McAfee says that both Microsoft and MySpace have been contacted. Which is not good English. Joris Evers, publicity director at McAfee, said the attack scenario requires someone to send new friend requests to MySpace users. When clicking on the person's picture or name link to view their profile, it shows a profile page overlaid with what looks like a legitimate Windows Automatic Updates pop-up box. Clicking on or near the pop-up results in a request for a file download marked as a Microsoft update called Update KB890830.exe. from a server that includes WinXPUpdate.microsoft in its name. As of Friday, the page was still available on the MySpace site. McAfee said its customers are protected, CNET tested, Zone Alarm, and a few other security apps that also blocked access to the malicious code. So if you have danced the security tango and installed Zone Alarm, you're safe. The rest of you, get to it immediately. All right, our next caller is Jerry on a cell phone. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question? Jerry? Hello, Jerry. Jerry is shy.
This XP machine has frozen up again.
Oh, I see. So he's there somewhere, but you can't get to it.
That's right.
Can I click on him?
I think you click there, don't you?
Right. Don't click anything.
Don't
just
click
talk.
Anything.
I
just
wanna
talk.
Discuss.
All right, we'll talk. Well, how about them Yankees?
New England did a good job last night. That was a good game, though, last night.
All right, try him now.
All right, we'll try him now. Jerry, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Thanks for calling. See you next week.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. No, go ahead, Jerry. What's your question?
I recently got an email with an attachment from a realtor that was in a Microsoft Office Word file.
Yep.
When I went to open the attachment, I don't have Microsoft Office on my computer, but I have Microsoft Works.
Yep.
I had Microsoft Office for 3 months when I bought the computer, but if you didn't buy it, it only lasted 3 months.
Right.
It wouldn't let me open the attachment with Microsoft Works.
No.
Which was Microsoft Works 8.5, so I went and asked a friend. He said, you got to upgrade to Microsoft Works 9 to open up an Office file.
Yeah.
Well, the Office 2007 changed the file format drastically, and a lot of older programs cannot read those formats.
Right. If it ends in .doc, 9 should open it. If it ends in .docx, 9 will not open it.
Jerry, but here's a cheaper and easier way to go.
Yeah.
If you go to openoffice.org.
Okay.
And download the OpenOffice. You will be able to open up any Word document.
Not the .docx's yet. Not yet.
Is it .docx?
You know, I'm not really sure. I'm actually driving in my car, and I just installed Microsoft Works 9.0 because they told me that would open it, and it didn't. So I spent $40 for nothing.
I'd still try OpenOffice. Yeah, I mean, he's got nothing to lose. It's a free download.
Right.
See, I run into this a lot on the Mac side, and people blame the Mac. It's not the Mac. It's whoever sent you the file should not have sent it as a Word file. They should have sent it as a text file or just pasted it in the body of the message.
There is an OpenOffice.OpenXML translator, which theoretically will translate OpenOffice, excuse me, .docx files to
Word. I had a bank send me an email with an attachment that was from Microsoft Office. And I had the same problem. I couldn't open it.
People at the other end shouldn't be doing that. They should send it a generic file.
Try OpenOffice, though, and I think you might have some luck with that.
Okay.
Well, like I say, worst case scenario, you're going to waste a few minutes downloading it, but you got a free product that works just as well as Office, and it was constantly updated. Oh, by the way, you can also export things out as PDFs, which you can't do in Word.
Right. So give it a try. Can't hurt. That's the way we do things here. Yeah.
So, guys, are we trying to help him open an attachment to an email that we've been telling people not to open
time? There is that.
But this was coming from somebody he knew.
Well, even that,
what he said.
Even that can be a problem because someone you know could be infected by something sending
That's
out.
That's true, Jerry. I would make sure you're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Chris. Thank you very much for catching that. Jerry, make sure that you have checked it with every antivirus program on Earth before you do try to open it. It may be that Works is protecting you from yourself at this moment. So,
and in general, when you're sending an email, don't attach anything. If it's a Word file, paste it into the body of the message.
Yeah, right.
Don't attach anything because that's how the viruses propagate.
Right. I have people who all the time are sending me not PowerPoint. They're PPS files, PowerPoint
slideshow. It's a PowerPoint slideshow, yeah.
I never open them. I don't care what they're supposed to be in them. I'm sure they're all funny and hilarious.
And it's probably just a series of JPEGs.
It would better
my
life.
Why bother making a PowerPoint slideshow out of it?
Right. I'm sure it would better my life if I open them. I never do.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling back on Super Spyware, but I got a couple things that came up during the course of waiting for you.
All righty.
The bad commercials thing. Greatest thing in the world to fight bad commercials is a DVR.
Yes, for now.
If you prefer, because you can just tell it to record and walk in a quarter after the hour, and by the end of the hour, you just caught up to the end of the show, and you hadn't had to watch any of the annoying Gecko or Mr. Huge commercials.
Yeah. Right, except for the fact, of course, that there's constant legislation in Congress to try to make it so that you can't fast-forward through commercials.
So far, they haven't won yet.
Which just proves there's nothing more dangerous than a legislator with pen in hand and your best interest at heart.
Exactly.
Cell phone ads. One thing you didn't bring up is airtime usage. If somebody's banging your cell phone, it's checking off your minutes.
Yeah.
I got a teenage son that takes care of that for me. I don't need commercials to do it.
Exactly. Well, that's why I think it's going to meet strong opposition.
Well, I would think so.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm paying somebody for X number of minutes per month and they're letting somebody send commercials to me, the consumer relations department's going to get their ears blistered.
Well, what most of the companies are worried about is if they do, you know, for the few bucks that they might make on this, the possible clients that might leave because of this is far greater.
Oh, I'd be gone.
Yeah, same here.
Contract or not, I'd make their life so miserable they'd let me out of the contract.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Because, I mean, there is a due expectation of privacy because you bought this service with the rights to hand out this number to who you want. It's not published in phone book.
Right. Okay. Last item before we get to super spyware. The gentleman who wanted to do a wireless in an outbuilding 100 foot away from the house.
Yep.
Depending on where his hub is inside his house, he may not even need to go to boosted systems. If he tries it, he may find that it might work. When I put in a wireless, took a laptop with a card in it and went around the neighborhood just to see, because he had nothing better to do at his time, to see just how far away he could get from the house and still make a connection. And he was well over 100 foot away from
the house. Nominal range of even wireless B is about 150 feet line of sight.
Right.
That depends on the construction of your house, if it's near a window.
We've got a G-router, so I don't know what that is. But, you know, it was like, as long as you don't get a lot of heavy steel in the way or something, you know, it seems to work. So
we had a customer that trying to get it on their patio out back, and it wouldn't work. We finally figured out they had leaded glass windows.
Yeah, so that'll do it.
Yep.
So anyhow, on to super spyware.
Yeah.
Now that we've gotten the fun stuff out of the way.
Exactly.
I've been working with this program and kind of testing it out, and I've called about it before. This week I had some time, so I ran Super Spyware, and then I turned around.
It's actually Super Anti-Spyware, right?
Super Anti-Spyware, sorry.
Okay, good.
And I ran it and then ran the AdAware SpyBot combo after it.
Yeah.
And Super Anti-Spyware didn't pick up anything, and AdAware did. Now, it was MRUs and a couple tracking cookies, but normally when I run the Super Anti-Spyware, it will clear everything out, and the other two don't get anything, and this time around it didn't.
It may have been that AdAware had a minor update that Super Anti-Spyware hadn't had yet. They always play.
That's why we always tell people
to
run at least a couple.
And now that you mention it, because I always do the updates before I run anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through all three programs, did the update, and then started running them. And Super Anti-Spyware didn't have an update, but the other two did.
There you go.
So it may have just, but
yeah, it's just a timing issue, and you know,
But it was just routine tracking cookies.
Right.
I looked, and it was off.
And that you can live with.
And it was off sites my wife goes to all the time anyway. Penny's and a couple of the other stores that she deals with all the time. So, you know, I'm always cleaning those out. So I was kind of surprised that Super Anti-Spyware didn't catch it because it wasn't anything that it hadn't caught before.
That's new. Right. That's interesting.
But for some reason, it just came up blank that time, and the other two didn't. And I've had it go the other way.
Right.
So it's kind of like I know Dave was leaning towards maybe you might be able to run this and not have to worry about the other two, and I was leaning that way myself until this happened, so now I'm kind of back to do all three.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. Like I said, I still want to try it out for a while. It's not one of these things I'm going to, you know, within a month say, yeah, let's do it. And no, this type of stuff and the protection, right now I'm running all three. You know, it doesn't hurt.
It just takes
time.
A long time to run.
Yeah.
Question, because I partition my hard drive, and I know a lot of people don't do that, but I prefer to do it this way. I've done it this way for years, and I'm happy with it.
Okay.
And my brain isn't broke, so let's not fix it.
Right.
I know where I put stuff, and that's where I want to put it so I can find
it. Right.
C is for Windows and critical
things
around Windows. D is for every other program.
Right.
E is for data. And F is miscellaneous, like where I take, when you have temporary download files and stuff like that, I tuck them in there. Do I need to go through all four segments?
Yes.
Really?
And in each username you may have.
But most likely, though, you're not going to find anything on the D, E, and F.
Yeah, I never did.
Unless something is attached to a document that you haven't opened
yet. Right. But for the most part,
particularly downloads, I would always scan the downloads.
Yeah.
Well, the computer's set up to scan downloads before I ever touch them anyway.
Well, that's nice. If you want to trust that, that's great. Again, I'm a belt and suspenders guy.
Well, along with the stuff that you've got, we've got Norton's in there and running, SpyBot's in there and running, Zone Alarm's in there and running. You know, there's enough protection stuff on this computer one of my sons says, you know, you got all this garbage in here running and it slows the whole thing down. I said, yeah, but without those, the thing doesn't run. So, you know.
Right. Well, I would always do the system drive and any executable files and the downloads.
Okay.
That's what I would do. Temp drive might have some stuff in it. And if somehow that one of those, because that's where a lot of the temp drive is where a lot of downloads put stuff before they move it to the regular drive. And if something did get in there and you accidentally ran it, you'd be caught. But, I mean, it's a crapshoot no matter how you do it. So choose.
Okay. the thought I've had is that if I want to do, you know, once a week or do a heavy scan while I'm out watching TV and let it run, that's one thing. But if I want to do a quick check on things, I just hit the, because all the document folders seems to be where a lot of the stuff winds up anyway, but in, under Windows, your documents and setting folders.
Right.
And these programs will go through all of the users. You know, I know you said you got to sometimes go in from running Windows Pro with SP4 and all the updates. Or
well, I don't think you have to do the whole drive, all your partitions every day.
No.
But you certainly have to do them once in a while. So if you let that happen on a Sunday or, you know, overnight when you're doing something else in the machine, if you leave your machine on, then I think you're good to go.
Yep.
Okay. Because, you know, sometimes it's like, yeah, okay, it's been a week since I've done this, but I don't have time right now, but I want to run a quick scan. I've been toying with the idea of, okay, instead of doing all four, let's hit where the tracking cookies lie and the other stuff lies and see if, and kind of shorten it up a little here and hit mainly like the C drive, which is where a lot of the quick stuff seems to get dumped.
Sure. Not a problem. Do it that way.
If that, you know, if
yes, it's fine.
That would probably catch the majority of.
Well, we catch a lot of them. Certainly won't catch all of them, but it will catch a lot of them. That's acceptable as long as you've got all that other stuff running and you're fairly reasonably certain that nothing got through, then doing that as a check would be adequate. All right. It's, what?
We got folks
on. Let's just say line three. How's that work for you?
That works.
All right. Line three. Who's this? Hello? Line three.
Hello?
Who's this?
This is Jim Rochester.
Hi, Jim. What's your question?
I've got a computer virus on my computer, and I think we got it from MySpace.
Probably.
We danced a tango, and we still can't get rid of it.
Then most likely you're going to have to take it into a shop and have it serviced there, because there are a few of them out there that you literally have to pull the hard drive out, put it in another machine so you can we can isolate it, and remove it that way.
Yeah, the problem is the virus is running and your programs can't delete a running file. Sometimes if you do it in safe mode, run your antivirus scan in safe mode,
but
that
Tango,
help.
The Tango makes you do that. So yeah. If he still got it after he did it in safe mode, he's got a problem.
Yep.
I'm afraid you're going to have to take it to somewhere, Jim. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Cody Wasdorf.
Dave Enright.
Steve Ray.
Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
We just made his
week. We made his week, I think. All right. As we reported earlier, Office 2007 and Office 2003 Service Pack 3 are blocking old file formats. CorelDRAW for one. WordStar was another, a couple of them. Microsoft has said they will not post new tools that allow you to unblock those file formats for 2007. It did unblock them in 2003, but will not unblock them in 2007. It cited a lack of interest in such tools and said existing workarounds accomplish the same thing. One of those workarounds being, you have to have 2003 as well, and then you unblock them in 2003 and you're going to open them and convert them into something that'll read them in 2007. Last week, after some users complained that Office 2003 Service Pack 3 had changed the suite security default so that applications would no longer open numerous file formats, including one used by Corel Corp's CorelDRAW graphics software, Microsoft apologized to Corel and posted downloads that let users unblock formats without manually editing the Windows registry. The company has also said it was sorry. We recognize we have not made any of this as usable as we'd like, and we apologize that this hasn't been as well documented or as easy as you need it to be. We believe in unicorns and rainbows and long walks on the beach. Several times last week, Microsoft noted that Office 2007 has had similar format blocking features in place since its November 2006 introduction. This is something that Office 2007 has done by default since the day it shipped, and it hasn't impacted users there. They just needed a big hug, said the Office product manager a week ago. He pointed users to a page on the Office website that explains how to set up a trusted location, a special folder on a local network drive. Files in a trusted folder aren't checked by Office 2007 security tools. Let me repeat that. Files in a trusted folder aren't checked by Office 2007 security tools. All of those of you out there who write viruses, I'll repeat it one more time. files in a trusted folder aren't checked by Office 2007 security tools. Trusted locations essentially make it very easy to set up a trusted... Oh, this is great. A Microsoft spokesperson said trusted locations essentially make it very easy to set up a trusted location. I think that's wonderful.
That's profound.
It is profound.
It's something.
So if you put something in a trusted location, create a folder, make it a trusted location, you can open any file type that you want. So let me suggest that you not put a lot of things indiscriminately in a trusted file folder. That would be, what's the word I'm looking for? Stupid. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don. We don't know where Don is from. Don, where are you from? Don?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
North Chi-Li.
North Chi-Li, New York. What's your question?
Hi, my question is, hey, nice show, guys.
Thanks.
I go into my computer and I hit the local disk and up pops the window. It has all my files and programs and everything. And it's quite a long list. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find a way of printing this.
Yeah, you can't print it well or easily or correctly from the screen in any way, shape, or form. What you need to do is go into DOS and do it. There's a series of commands on how to do it in DOS. I'm not quite sure how to give them to you over the phone.
Well, DIR bracket LPT1.
Well, you can do it right to the right.
Or PRN will send it to your print device.
Right. So if you do DIR.
But will it work, though, with a USB printer?
Well, if you pipe it to PRN, your print device, that should work rather than LPT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should, yeah.
Well, you can do a print screen. Doesn't actually print the screen. It takes a picture of the screen, puts it on a clipboard.
Yeah, and you paste it.
And then you paste that into like MS Paint or something. That's one way to do it. Although if the window is longer than the screen, that may not work.
Right.
What was the other way we used to do it? Select all and copy and then paste that into a text editor. And then you get all of the file names and can print those.
What I want to know is if there's a way that you can just print them one at a time. I guess you could do DIR, the greater than symbol, and a file name that will print it to a file, and then you can then print the file.
So you put it into a file and get them out of the file.
DIR space greater than myfiles.txt, that would do it.
Okay. We'll try it.
Right? Right, right. And then it's in a file, and then you can print it. That's easily enough done.
See, when I was working, we could do that quite often, but I never wrote it down. Because I always had a man that's in charge. I can come on and say, oh, yeah, here's how you do it. And blah, 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 and I'm done. And I can see everything that I have in there, so I can get in there and delete everything.
Right.
So I have a record before I know what the hell I'm doing there. Okay,
right.
Okay, we'll try that.
Give it a try. Let us know. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Bye. Have a great day.
You too. Our next caller is Ken from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
Actually, I don't have a question. I have a suggestion. A previous caller called about trying to open up a Word document, and he wasn't able to.
Because he was in works?
Because he was in works, correct.
Oh, excellent. Jerry, I hope you're still listening. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I just wrote a column for this not too long ago in ComputerLink.
That Ken. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you guys?
Ken writes great columns in ComputerLink. You should pick up a copy and read his stuff. It's very good.
Thanks. Microsoft Word Viewer and PowerPoint Viewer and Excel Viewer are available free online from Microsoft.
Yep.
And they will open up any Word document from 97 to 2003.
But the problem is the 2007 files.
Right. If it's 2007, you got a problem. But Ken is absolutely right. If it's an older version, even if Works won't open it, the viewer will let you see it. You can't edit it, but you can read it. Thanks, Ken. I appreciate that. We got to go. Take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave, Steve, Chris, Corey, Rob, me, Nick, 51 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 55 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Fritz from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Fritz. What's your question?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm a Mac user, too, but Steve keeps me on the straight and narrow.
Good.
However, my wife's machine is an XP home version, and I update that every day I have the time. But what I've been doing for quite some time is every time I do my updates, my scans, I always go in and set a new restore point. Am I doing the correct thing?
Yes. Well, here's an interesting problem. Are you setting it before or after you run the scan?
After.
Perfect. if you dance the security tango, one of the things we say to do is to turn off restore points because there are viruses that can hide in the restore area. But after you dance the tango, you should put a new restore point in so that you could go back to that known clean place if you absolutely had to.
See, that's the catch 22 is that the restore points are a good feature that the bad guys have exploited.
Yep.
Exactly. You are doing the right thing, Fritz.
Okay, and the other thing, I'm trying AVG, which has a free anti-root kit. I can't tell you anything more about it than that. I'm giving it a shot to see if anything comes up.
Yep.
It's a great little product, and one of the reasons we recommend the AVG line. And, yeah, I hope you never find out that it does work.
Yeah, you don't want to find a root kit on your system.
Yeah.
Thank you, Fritz. Our next caller.
I just found for our previous caller, there is a way to add a print directory feature in Windows XP. So now you can right click on a folder and it will print the directory contents.
Perfect. And that's up in our link section. Yep. Okay, excellent. Our next caller, Dave from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I'm looking to set up a website.
Yeah.
And the reading I've done is one of the warnings is make sure that you own the domain name, not just kind of lease it for one of these providers.
Right.
But I can't seem to find where would I go to actually, if you will, buy my domain name so I own it.
Often you can buy it through the people who are setting up your domain. So let's say, well, we always use the Soundbites people recommend.
Right.
Mm-hmm. CLSS Enterprises, CLSS.com.
I'm sorry, CLFF or SS?
SS. Charlie, Laura, Samuel.
Oh, CLSS.
.com. And they are inexpensive but excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy your domain name from them, and you definitely own it yourself. They'll help you set it up, or they'll, you know, depending on what you want to pay for, they'll set it up for you, whatever you want to do. And it goes on one of their many, many servers, but you own the domain name
and
yourself.
You have the problem, full control.
And you pay for it yourself.
The problem that occurs is you register your domain with some registration company, and they claim ownership of it, and you're the technical representative, but they actually own it. So then when you want to move to a different domain company, it makes it a lot harder because you don't own it.
Right.
And it's surprising how many domain companies do that. They list themselves as the owner.
Right. But CLSS lists you as the owner.
Oh, that's great.
I own Ask Nick. I own Security Tango. I own Nick F. I own Soundbites. We own what we own, and CLSS just runs them on their servers for us. All right. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright. Chris, again, has been donating his time freely and happily to do all our archive stuff. And
the last couple of podcasts are finished and they'll be uploaded today.
Yes, he's been a busy little bee, and I don't think we can blame a guy who's volunteering if he gets a little behind your schedule. So thank you, Chris, for all the time you have put into this. And, of course, Rob Linton, who, despite not feeling well, despite having a little bit of a cold.
I was not hungover.
I didn't say that. I was had a little bit of a cold. We'd like to thank him for coming in and doing yeoman service. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week. This is Soundbites at 59 After the Hour on 1180 WHAM.